The Locked On Giants podcast is brought to you in part by BlueChew.com. Visit BlueChew.com for more information and to take advantage of their special offer for Locked On Giants listeners. Enter the promo code Locked On at checkout to get your first shipment for only $5 shipping and handling. That's BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com.
You are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. My name is Patricia Traina. I cover your New York Giants for a variety of places. Follow me on Twitter at Patricia_Traina. You can find links to all my work. I have work on Forbes. I have work on the Giants Maven. I have work on Big Blue View. And of course, I'm here on Locked On Giants, where you can participate in the weekly mailbags that we run. And as part of our summer schedule, I have been booking different guests from other Locked On teams podcasts, and we've been previewing the Giants 2019 schedules. And on today's show, we're going to saunter back into the NFC East, and on the line with me is Chris Russell. He is the host of Locked On Redskins. Chris, thanks so much for coming on with me.
Oh, Patricia, always my pleasure. How are you?
Doing very well. So a lot of exciting times down in Washington. New quarterback, some new personnel. Let's start with the offense, and let's talk about Mr. Haskins.
Yeah, so, you know, there's always, as you know, and it's pretty much this way, of course, with the Giants, or at least it has been in the last couple of years, there's always some sort of controversy or always something to watch and always something interesting. So, yeah, Dwayne Haskins, number 15 overall pick. The Redskins did the right thing, in taking him. I think he's the best quarterback in the draft, and I said that long before on my podcast and my radio shows before he was drafted by the Redskins. So that's not a homer pick. I'm from New York. I grew up a Giants fan, so it's not a homer pick by any means. I think Dwayne Haskins is the best quarterback in the draft, even better than Kyler Murray, and that would speak to all, of course, better than, in my opinion, Daniel Jones, who the Giants ultimately selected. But I think what was interesting was them not trading up to get him, him falling into place. Supposedly, from everything I've heard and others have heard, that was a Dan Snyder pick. It makes all the sense in the world. They needed a jolt of energy even after signing Landon Collins, who I'm sure we'll get to at some point. They needed to sell tickets. They needed to move merchandise. They needed to sell jerseys. They needed new blood because Alex Smith's injury and his prohibitive cap hit, Patricia, is so bad, so crippling, that this was pretty much their only choice. And since then, Haskins has done mostly the right thing. He's looked all right in mini camp practices and OTAs. He's looked really good at times, and he's looked, well, like a rookie at times behind a shambles up an offensive line. And I'm sure we're going to get to Eric Flowers in a little bit. But the bottom line is he's got a long way to go before I think he's ready to start week one against the Philadelphia Eagles and maybe even week four at MetLife Stadium against the Giants.
You know, you mentioned, just sticking with Haskins for a moment, there are two schools of thoughts regarding a rookie quarterback, especially, you know, a high draft pick. One school of thought, and I think Joe Theismann actually mentioned this, is that Haskins should sit this year and behind, I believe it's Case Keenum they acquired in the trade, and just kind of bring him along and not throw him out there on day one. And then there are others who are going to say, well, look, you know, he's the future, so get him out there, let him get his feet wet. Where do you stand on that debate?
Well, so Joe, you know, it's funny. Joe called into a radio show that I was supposed to be doing, but I was gone, so somebody was filling in for me. And Joe sometimes just calls in, solicits his opinion, or just gives his opinion because he's Joe Theismann. He can do whatever he wants. And everybody is very hungry for that analysis and opinion because he does bend the ear of Bruce Allen, Dan Snyder, and maybe to some degree Jay Gruden. I think Joe is absolutely correct that Dwayne Haskins should not start week one. I would not start him, Patricia, for several weeks into the season, especially with the gauntlet of a schedule that the Redskins have. And it's not just because of that. However, I do, Joe. I think Joe is very, very, very wishful thinking when he says, well, you know, Dwayne Haskins should sit out or miss all of 2019. That's not going to happen. There's no chance that happens unless the only caveat to that would be is if Case Keenum is even better than he was in 2017 in Minnesota, which is nearly impossible to think that that's even a reality. And even then, by the end of that year, Mike Zimmer couldn't wait to get rid of him. So it's not going to happen. Haskins is going to play at some point this year, but Joe is absolutely right. He's not ready for week one. He's not ready now. He won't be, even if he looks really good in preseason games, Patricia, because here's the thing. We know preseason games and we know training camp practices, and we, with the collective bargaining agreement and the limited workouts and the limited preparation and the limited time that you can practice and full contact, and then also trying to get Case Keenum work in games and get Colt McCoy, the veteran incumbent, there's no way that Dwayne Haskins can absolutely 1,000% be ready to go for week one in the Philadelphia Eagles when the bullets fly for real. Not to mention, he's never gone through an NFL game planning week, right? I mean, we all know that when we get to the regular season mode, the game planning is so specific, he's never been through that. Sure, he's been through that with Urban Meyer in college, but it's a different level when you're preparing for the Philadelphia Eagles or the Chicago Bears or the Dallas Cowboys. Let him go through that process first as a backup to learn how that goes before you throw him to the wolves.
Absolutely. And I think I agree with Joe, not necessarily to hold him out the entire year, but, you know, we have seen cases over the years where when a rookie quarterback is thrown out there, if he doesn't have a strong supporting cast around him, that can do more harm than good in the long run. And speaking of supporting cast, you brought it up at the start of the show. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that offensive line, shall we?
Sure. Where do you want to start? You want to start with Harry Flowers or Trent Williams?
Why don't you pick? Because it just sounds like, you know, from the outside looking in, it sounds like that offensive line is kind of going through some hard times right now.
Right. So, I mean, of course, you know, they've heavily invested between Trent Williams, Morgan Moses at right tackle, Brandon Scherff, who's going into a fifth-year option deal, 1 year away from free agency, and he costs a ton of money coming off of a torn pectoral. They've invested a lot in the offensive line. Bill Callahan, still their coach. But Trent Williams, for Giants fans that are unaware, is missed all of the offseason workouts, including mandatory minicamp. And the story, basically, as it's gone, because Trent and his agent have not spoken at all, at least on the record, to anyone that I know of, they basically say that the medical treatment Trent got for what was thought at one point to be a cancerous tumor or a cancerous growth on his scalp was the tipping point to Trent's frustration and anger and hostility towards the Redskins organization. And if you believe Jason Lockenfora of CBS Sports, he says that Trent Williams at one point and maybe still currently believes he will never play for the Redskins again and has demanded a trade. Now, I don't know that to be absolutely true. I've known Trent Williams since he walked in the door day one back in 2010 as the first draft pick of Mike Shanahan. And Trent is a very proud, stubborn guy, and he's a little bit of a hothead. I think he'll calm down. I think he'll be back, but he has a legitimate gripe because the Redskins' post-injury medical staff care and treatment is absolutely one of the worst functioning groups and units in professional sports, period. It has been for a long time, Patricia. It always will be until they make significant changes, and they have not been willing to make it. So we don't know if Trent Williams will be here. I don't think he'll be here for day one of training camp. I think he'll be here for week one of the NFL season, but I don't know that for sure. That moves us into Eric Flowers territory. I know this is long-winded. If Trent Williams is not there, Eric Flowers is your starting left tackle. Bill Callahan, legendary offensive line coach, told me 2 weeks ago, we didn't sign Eric Flowers to be a left tackle. Giants fans know how much he struggled on the outside at left and right tackle. They signed him to be a guard. And if Eric Flowers has to play tackle, the Redskins are in big-time trouble. We don't know if he can play guard, but if he has to play tackle, they know, he knows, everybody knows they are in big trouble. So that is even more reason not to start Dwayne Haskins in week one.
Of course, Giant fans will probably tell you that you're in trouble at just all the same, regardless if it's tackle or guard, if you have to start Eric Flowers. Because, look, I mean, the guy has talent. He has tools. The problem is I know when he was with the Giants, he went through, I think, I want to say three different offensive line coaches, and the results were the same. And it was just frustrating. Although, you know, to be fair, there was a tiny period of in time when he actually played well. I mean, a lot of people don't really talk about that, but he just was too inconsistent. And then when things sour, his attitude soured, and you know, you guys know the story. The Giants jettisoned him. He was one of the first, I think, amongst one of the first players. New general manager Dave Gettleman jettisoned, and now he's down there. You know, after a stay with Jacksonville, which I thought was kind of ironic that he went back with Tom Coughlin. At the time, Pat Flaherty, who was his original offensive line coach here with New York. So. Other than the flower situation, I mean, how else is that offensive line? Do you think that, is it stable otherwise?
It's pretty stable. I mean, look, left guard has been a huge problem for them. So they drafted a kid in the fourth round out of Indiana, Wes Martin, who benched 38 times at 225. So he's country strong. I don't know if he can play, but he's raw, physical, and nasty on tape. And they have high hopes for him. And he's likely going to be the starter. They drafted another kid, Ross Pierschbacher, out of Alabama. They love Alabama kids. They've got about 8 or 9 of them on the roster. They drafted him in the fifth round. He can play both center and guard, so that's an option there. They have a pretty good center in Chase Roullier, who they drafted in the sixth round a couple of years ago, played every single offensive snap last year. A little bit banged up during the offseason, but he's pretty reliable. And then at right guard, that, again, Brandon Scherff is not completely healthy right now, but he was participating limited in individuals during the offseason. So we know he's at least a Pro Bowl quality right guard. I think he's a little overrated. Everybody else seems to think he's really good. Reasonable minds can disagree. Morgan Moses plays in every game, is as tough as nails at right tackle, is not Hall of Fame-esque, is not like all pro-esque, but is good, is solid. The only problem with Morgan Moses is he gets beat up and is rolling around on the ground every game, and you never know whether he's dying or whether he's going to come back and play the next series. So, yeah, the Redskins have a pretty decent offensive line if Trent Williams is there. Again, they address depth, as we mentioned, with Eric Flowers and the versatility there, the couple of kids that they drafted. So they have more depth than they've had in recent years because they've had so many injuries to that particular unit. They finally addressed it. And I think, again, with Trent Williams, they're a solid group. Without Trent Williams, they're obviously a below average group.
Now let's talk about the skill position players, because that obviously is going to be, you know, the spokes in the wheel, in addition to whoever the quarterback is. I know Washington lost Jamison Crowder. They picked up a couple guys. Where do they stand right now with the backs, the tight ends, and the receivers? And where's your biggest concern amongst those groups?
All right, so let's go through this, and I'll try and do it as quickly as I can. They re-sign Adrian Peterson at running back, but he's 34 years old. How many more great years like last year, which kind of came out of nowhere, can they get out of him? But they hope that their late second-round pick from a year ago, Darius Geis, who tore his ACL 6 carries into the preseason last year, is ready to go. He has not practiced at all, is expected to be ready to go for training camp, but we'll have to wait and see how slow he gets worked into the mold there. And quite honestly, I don't expect him to play much in the preseason, if at all. They have other guys, Samaje Perine, who they drafted in the fourth round a couple years ago. Giants fans might know him. He's been so inconsistent, but Jay Gruden loves him for whatever reason he has. And Chris Thompson, who is great when he's healthy. Problem is, he's never healthy. Same thing for tight end. Jordan Reed, great when healthy. He's never healthy. So we don't know what the Redskins have necessarily in Jordan Reed. I think he'll be better this year than he was last year, coming off of a major injury. But I still need to see that. And then they have 35-year-old Vernon Davis, who makes a lot of money, but and makes some catches and has some athleticism and is a great leader, but makes a lot of money and can't block for a 35-year-old tight end. Then you fast forward to wide receivers, Patricia, real quickly. Paul Richardson is a guy that they identified, Jay Gruden and his staff identified. Jay Gruden does a lot of the personnel because they don't have a traditional general manager structure. He identified Paul Richardson as his DeSean Jackson light, as the guy that would move the needle on offense and not only give them strike up the band material or ability, but also loosen things up for an offense underneath and the inside-outside options that we just talked about. So as long as that guy's on the field, which he never is, the Redskins will be a pretty decent passing offense. That's the problem, though. He never is. Then you have disappointing first-round pick Josh Doctson. You mentioned losing Jamison Crowder at slot to the New York Jets in free agency. They wanted to bring him back. He was too expensive. They drafted Terry McLaurin, wide receiver, out of Ohio State in the third round. He's the best special teams player in the draft, and he's also an inside-outside receiver with 4.35 speed. He's raw. He's still developing as a receiver, routes, consistency, all that stuff. But I think he can be a potential good fit there, along with a guy who nobody thought anything of, Mr. Irrelevant a year ago, the last pick in the draft, Trey Quinn, who is going to be their starting slot receiver and is going to replace Jamison Crowder. Again, if he can stay healthy, which he was not healthy pretty much at all last year, if he can stay healthy, I think that's a guy that can catch 60, 65 passes and be a really good weapon for the Redskins. So that's, again, a quick snapshot look at a bunch of different questions, a bunch of different positions where health is really, as many fans know, primarily the number one thing that is holding these teams back.
Sounds like you guys got some serious questions there on the offensive side of the ball, huh?
I mean, you know, again, look, I know every team has these questions, and I know every team can say, well, as long as we're healthy, I mean, the Eagles are going to say that with Carson Wentz, right? And maybe with Jason Peters. And so we could say that for every team, right? I mean, the Giants,
sure.
Obviously, you know, now with no Odell Beckham, right? If they lose Sterling Shepard, they're in trouble, right?
Yep.
I mean, you know, so we could say this about every team. It just seems like the Redskins, because they've had the most injured players on IR each of the last 2 years, and over the last 5 years, Patricia, they've missed the most man games due to injury in the entire NFL. You know, the health thing becomes such a big thing. But if I'm wrong, and maybe you could correct me, when the Giants last won the Super Bowl, what are we talking, like the 2011 season, mm-hmm. 2012 Super Bowl, I seem to remember, and again, maybe you can correct me, them losing five or six key contributors before the regular season even started, in terms of starters or key role contributors, and I don't remember names, but I seem to remember that as being a big thing and a big storyline, and then the Giants were able to put together what they put together. And my point in all of this would be, you know what? I know you've got a lot of injuries. I know it's a physically violent sport. Find a way to suck it up. And for the most part, the Redskins have been competitive, 7-9 the last 2 years, chance to be 8-8 if they don't completely shoot themselves in the foot in the season finale like they have the last 2 years, one at the Giants, home against Philadelphia. So that's not bad. But you know what? If you're going to be a playoff team, you've got to find a way to not only suck it up, but you've got to find a way to not shoot yourself in the foot, which the Redskins do way too often.
Indeed, indeed. Good stuff so far, Chris. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk defense. So, folks, stay with us. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants. We're doing a preview of the Giants' 2019 opponents. I'm Patricia Traina. On the line with me is Chris Russell. He is the host of Locked On Redskins. He's given us a really detailed breakdown of the Washington Redskins. We just covered the offense, and now we're going to turn our attention to defense. And I think we've got to start off with a couple of ex-Giants who have joined the Washington Redskins, Landon Collins at safety, and Mr. Wee, as we call them up here in New York, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start there, if we could, Chris. Your thoughts on the addition of those two guys?
Yeah, so I'll take DRC first, and then we'll work our way to Landon Collins. You know, it's interesting, obviously, like you said, that the chemistry and the cohesion that those two individual players have coming over, you know, I know DRC was with the Raiders last year and then retired. And, of course, that's still a question, whether his true commitment is to playing football and whether he'll be able to go through the long grind. I hope it is, because they struck out on Orlando Scandrick last year in this role, and they cut him midway through training camp. They cannot allow that to happen this year. But DRC has looked pretty good so far, and I'll take it one step further, Patricia. And I know he played some of this limited snaps with the Giants, but new defensive backs coach Ray Horton told me a couple of weeks ago, new defensive backs coach for the Redskins, Ray Horton, told me that it's possible DRC could not only play slot corner, which he did in his last year with the Giants and pretty well, not only could he play outside corner, but eventually he could move to a post free safety position. And I know he did a very limited amount of that with the Giants at times. I think it was like 15 snaps, according to Pro Football Focus Premium, over a 2-year period, something like that, somewhere in that range. But the bottom line is they think he's, because of his build and because of his savvy, that he could make that transition, which others have made, so it's not absurd to think about that. Now, that leads us into Landon Collins, because they spent a lot of money on Landon Collins, as every Giant fan knows, and I know there was, you know, a lot of Giant fans frustrated with Dave Gettleman, but I just didn't see the Giants paying anywhere close to what the Redskins paid for Landon Collins. The Redskins paid Landon Collins not only to be a safety, but to be a leader and to be a culture changer. And as part of that Alabama movement, he comes from, of course, the University of Alabama, as everyone knows, and they overpaid him. I think everybody would agree with that. But what they hope he can do is, you know, again, not only be the physical in-the-box safety that Giants fans know he is, and really good on those coverage zone areas underneath and in the intermediate range, but they hope they can get him to be adequate, fine, whatever, if they want to use him as a deep center field safety, which I don't know. I'm going to ask you that. I don't think that's a smart idea, but they hope he can at least be adequate or fine or whatever. He's not Sean Taylor, the guy that he idolized and the reason, one of the main reasons why he joined the Redskins. But Collins is going to provide a serious shot of leadership. Even at 25, you guys know what kind of character he is. They haven't gotten that from Josh Norman. And this is going to be Josh Norman's last year with the Redskins, even though he's under contract for two more years. They almost got rid of him this offseason, and I was told many coaches wanted to move on from him. That's what they paid. That's what they want. And that's what they expect from Landon Collins to a large degree, and then even from DRC as well, to add that veteran leadership and that stability on the back end that, quite honestly, Josh Norman hasn't given them enough of.
You know, speaking of Josh Norman, you know, it's he doesn't have his buddy Odell anymore to do battle with anymore. It's like, you know, we mentioned him. You know, a lot of people felt that when Carolina let go of him, that the reason why he was so successful was he was a product of the system. He hasn't quite had that success with Washington. Is it because they've been asking him to do different things? Or what do you think's been going on? Why he hasn't maybe been as productive as he was when he was with Carolina?
Yeah, a couple of things. Primarily in Carolina, he played a cover three defense, you know, a zone defense. Here in Washington, they've tried that plenty. He's done that. They've tried man-to-man. He's bitched and moaned, excuse my language, when not matched up in man coverage against guys like Antonio Brown and, other premier wide receivers like Hopkins down in Houston and all of those guys. You know, so when he's been, they've tried a variety of different things. And here's the bottom line: when he's in man coverage, because of his feistiness and his physicality and his veteran savvy, he's pretty good. But he gets beat a lot underneath and in tight contested situations because he doesn't have the blazing speed and because he doesn't have great size, i.e. say like DRC size. What is DRC? 6'1.5", 6'2"? He doesn't have that, meaning Josh Norman. He's 6 foot, which is fine, but against 6'4 receivers, he gets beat on those 50-50 contested balls when in man press coverage. When he's in zone, that's still when he's at his best, Patricia. But the problem is it's either been miscommunication on the back end with safeties. They've had a lot of communication issues. Or it's been where Josh gets beat off the line of scrimmage because he's playing deep off the line of scrimmage and giving room. And receivers are taking that room and cutting underneath and hitting those zone areas that the Redskins aren't able to cover. And then Josh Norman is kind of, you know, I guess either charged or looked upon as not making enough big plays. And that leads us into the other part of it, which is he hasn't made enough, you know, turnovers or big game-changing kind of momentum plays. He was better at it last year than in year two. He was fairly good at it in year one with the Redskins, but there hasn't been enough game-changing plays. And according to Pro Football Focus, and again, I know people get very upset about this, but he got beat for 8 touchdowns last year. So, you know, like okay, maybe that's not the worst thing in the world, but when you're paying a guy $15 million under your salary cap, I need better than getting beat for 8 touchdowns. You know, whether it's 7, 8, 9, whatever it is, Patricia, I need better than that, you know? So the Redskins need better than that. Jay Gruden has admitted Josh needs to be better, period.
So going to be interesting to see what he delivers and if you think indeed this is going to be his final year with Washington. Chris, let's talk about the front seven because I think that, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's the strength of that defense, at least it was as of last year. Would you agree?
Yeah, the defense, look, the defensive line is really, really good. Let's start there. They've invested heavily in it. They have one of the best defensive line coaches in the NFL, and Jim Tomsula, the former 49er defensive line coach, and for one bad, bad, bad year, head coach. I don't know if that was necessarily his fault. That was a pretty dysfunctional organization at that point. But anyway, Jim Tomsula is a really good defensive line coach. They invested a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, in Jonathan Allen, number 17 pick from Alabama. Should have been a top 5 pick. There were some concerns about arthritis in his shoulder. So far, that hasn't been a problem. He's a stud, Patricia. He's a great leader. He's the captain of that defense. He is such a good dude. I you know, can't say enough good things about Jonathan Allen. They drafted his defensive line running mate, Deron Payne, 1 year later, 1 year ago, number 13 overall. Good run stopper, better pass rusher than he was given credit for. And he continues to get better and better again going into year two. Matt Ioannidis, they just re-signed him to a contract. Fifth round pick in 2015, rather, out of Temple. I loved him coming out of the draft. I thought he was an under the radar guy. I'm so glad his career has turned out to be what it is. He had, I think, 7.5, 8 sacks last year, largely because he's a nonstop motor guy, also because he benefits from playing with Payne and Jonathan Allen. And I will tell you this real quickly, they have two backup guys to rotate in their top 5 on defensive line. Caleb Brantley, who was let go by the Cleveland Browns, but at one point was thought to be, before he got into some trouble, a late first round pick. That dude has looked like a stud in the offseason. They love him. They love his work ethic, so on and so forth. And also Tim Settle, a backup nose tackle from Virginia Tech, who they drafted last year. So their defensive line is arguably the best defensive line in football if it's all healthy. Linebackers took a big hit with Reuben Foster tearing his ACL first play of organized team activities. That is a dagger blow. They've got some depth there. They brought in John Bostic, a veteran who's bounced around, former second-round pick with a number of teams, but played pretty well with Pittsburgh last year. They brought him in to replace him. They have some other guys. And at outside linebacker, they drafted Montez Sweat with the second first-round pick, moving back up into the first round. Let me tell you something. Giants fans are going to not like him if he's anything close to what I've seen on tape at Mississippi State and what I've seen so far with my very own eyes. And the people that I've talked to that coached him at Mississippi State know him well. That dude is a machine. That dude is an absolute just stud if he's right and if he's healthy. Still a little bit raw, but he's really, really good if he's anything close to what I've seen so far. And then Ryan Kerrigan, oh, by the way, all he does is get 11 or 12 sacks every year and play every game. So, you know, the Redskins have some talent on that front seven. There's no doubt the Reuben Foster injury hurt them, but they are pretty damn good in their front seven. The back end is certainly a big question mark. I think it'll be better than it was last year, but that front seven is pretty darn good, Patricia.
I thought you were going to forget Ryan Kerrigan because he's always he's always been a thorn in the side of the Giants' offensive line. I mean, last year I think he just ate him alive.
You're right, and I didn't mean to. It's just, you know, this goes to show you, like, the Redskins did not take defense seriously for a very long time. When Mike Shanahan and Jim Haslett were here, Shanahan as the head coach, Jim Haslett as the defensive coordinator, and even in year one, year two of the Jay Gruden era, 2014, 2015, the Redskins looked at defense as like, pah, we don't need to play defense. We don't need to invent. We'll just get a bunch of 9-to-5 ham and eggers, and we'll roll anybody out there, and we'll just outscore everybody. Well, they quickly realized, as I was screaming about then, and I scream a lot, Patricia, sorry. They quickly realized how dumb and how stupid that is, and they finally started investing in their defensive line, and they finally started investing in their defense as a whole. Sure, they had Kerrigan as a number 16, I think was, pick overall in the 2011 draft, and yes, they bypassed J.J. Watt, but Kerrigan has been the rock, the fabric, the cornerstone, if you will. But they needed so much more than that. And now, over the last 2+ years, they have finally built this defense to be the rock, the foundation that they can lean on while they have instability at quarterback, which we kind of already discussed, and while they don't have so much of an explosive offense, which is typically the trend in the NFL now, and certainly the way Jay Gruden would prefer it. But they've realized this is the only chance they have to win football games.
Chris, final question for you. There's been some talk that Jay Gruden is on the hot seat. If he doesn't win, he's out after this year. Where do you think that stands right now?
Oh, I think it's true. I mean, Jay has 2 years left on his contract. He is the first coach in Redskins history under Dan Snyder's ownership, I should say, which is now 20+ years, to last as long as he has. He has the 2 years left on his contract, again, this upcoming year, the second to last year. It clearly, if they get off to a really bad start, you could see a coaching change just to shock things and change things up. You could more realistically see it, Patricia, after a week 9 game against the Buffalo Bills, if they're, say, 3-6 or 2-7 after a really tough start to their season schedule-wise, you could see it then. I could certainly see it happening after the season if they don't make the playoffs. Here's the thing. Jay Gruden has, we talked about the exorbitant amount of injuries. Again, he has kept them competitive. For the most part, they show up every week. They shoot themselves in the foot a lot. Don't get me wrong. They cause themselves a lot of problems, but he has dealt with a lot of dysfunction at the very top of the organization. He has become a political front man, whereas when he first got here and he was unused to dealing with the media, you know, he was firing bullets left and right and throwing players under the bus. Now he realizes how to play the game. He plays poker with the media. And I think Redskins management, organization, and ownership likes that about him. So Jay kind of takes the bullets for a lot of them and manages to keep the team competitive. Yet, that being said, again, he's completed 5 years, and he's only made the playoffs once, and he's been above 500 just twice in those 5 years. So if you have a situation where you complete 6 years and you've only made the playoffs once and you've only been over 500 twice in 6 years, it's hard to see him lasting for a seventh year.
Going to be kind of difficult, though, if they do end up getting rid of him and starting from scratch, because, you know, bringing along a rookie quarterback, ideally you like to have some consistency, I would think.
No doubt. Now, It's also important to point out that if you believe everything that I've heard and what others have reported, including Diana Rossini of ESPN, just to throw a couple of names out there that Giants fans obviously would recognize besides the local reporting that has been done on this and the sourcing, is that Jay Gruden did not want Dwayne Haskins as his number one quarterback. He wanted, ta-da, Giants fans, Daniel Jones as his number one quarterback. So, you know, you have to wonder kind of what the dynamic of that relationship is going to be. My understanding is it's fine. They're, you know, like Jay has accepted it and he's going to roll with it. That being said, I don't think Jay thinks in any way, shape, or form Dwayne Haskins is ready to go to start the season as Redskins quarterback. I think that only happens if he's crowbarred, shoehorned, or forced to do it from ownership and Bruce Allen. So it'll be a really interesting dynamic to see a coach on the hot seat, a coach that is desperate to kind of make his offense go and hum and be really good and keep up with the Joneses, no pun intended, and win games, right? But he allegedly, reportedly, I believe, didn't want this particular quarterback and only settled on this particular quarterback because A, they had no choice, and B, because he was kind of forced into it. So it's going to be a really interesting kind of dynamic to watch over the next 5 months, Patricia?
Yeah, it sounds it. Maybe. I mean, sounds like you guys are going to have no shortage of stories down there, that's for sure.
We are never bored, I can tell you that much.
It sounds like it. Chris, before we sign off for today, tell everybody where they can find all your work.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you. So the Locked On Redskins podcast, of course, available wherever you can get Locked On Giants podcast, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Player FM, Megaphone, all that stuff. Locked On Redskins podcast, where we try and do 4 or 5 a week, a little inconsistent at different times of the year. But for the most part, it's 4 to 5 issues or episodes per week. Also, they can listen in the greater DMV area, meaning D.C., Maryland, Virginia, on 106.7 The Fan, sports radio station, much like WFAN in New York. Also on radio.com, wherever they might be, you can listen to 106.7 The Fan on radio.com as well. And then I also write for thefandc.com, Warpath Magazine, which is a subscription-based digital newspaper. I think that's it. I think that's all my different jobs. I know you've got a ton of jobs.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I don't know if I have as many jobs as you, Patricia, but
I think you have more
out of there.
I think you had more for sure. Chris, excellent stuff. I can't thank you enough for coming on with me, doing an excellent job breaking down the Washington Redskins. And we will definitely be talking, I'm sure, during the season for the two crossover shows that we do here on the Locked On NFL Network. So Giant fans, make sure you check out Chris's work. Make sure you keep listening to Locked On Giants, and we'll have more previews of Giants 2019 opponents coming up in these last few weeks before the start of training camp. For Chris Russell, this is Patricia Traina signing off.